Potting
is winning.
Potting is winning. Season 1, episode 4. Victory Monday. Pat Vint, Adam Jacoby. Adam, how are you feeling?
Feeling good, feeling great. Feeling great, feeling good. How about you?
Is it weird to have optimism for a team that still is this bad on offense?
Well, it depends. Like, I feel like at the very least, the offense has a sense of what it wants to do. And that's better than where we saw them 2 weeks ago. You can see the vision.
Yeah, I mean, the progression is obviously there, right? Even if it still isn't necessarily resulting in anything meaningful on the scoreboard. So Iowa wins 27-10 at Rutgers, a game that was basically over at halftime due to two defensive touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily pretty on offense, but it felt like they're starting to work things out on the offensive line, which has led to a little bit of an improvement in the running game. They certainly have two, maybe three legit halfbacks to work with at this point. Mm-hmm. Caleb Johnson seems to be a bit of a revelation. I'd like to see him get the ball in the passing game more often, but as a runner, the last two games, he's been spectacular. The receivers are starting to get healthy, although they're still not quite there. And it was patently obvious in this game when they went more than a half without completing a pass to a receiver. But it did actually mean that Arlen Bruce wasn't like the complete focus of the offense for 1 week, which probably is a good thing at this point. Give that poor kid a bit of a break. I'm saying, like, all in all, I walked away from Saturday night a little bit hopeful for the rest of the season in a way that I hadn't been the first 3 weeks, but that could all go away very, very quickly. It's ephemeral. It's fleeting. It may not even be real.
Well, we'll find out how real it is when Michigan comes to town and has the benefit of playing Iowa under the noonday sun, as opposed to under the lights at Kinnick Stadium. I think when Fox announced that it was the big noon Saturday game, my expectations for how Iowa Michigan was going to go moved about 20 points in Michigan's favor.
Yeah.
And that's that, I like, dead serious. I'm not sure that Kinnick, and I'd love to be proven wrong, but it's a different atmosphere at night at Kinnick Stadium. It just is, especially for the big games. And I get that Fox is making its decisions based on what's best for, you know, its television ratings and all of that. And they don't go into these things thinking, well, what's best for Iowa? Like that's not how it works. But right. I was bummed out, absolutely. And plenty of Michigan fans I know were thrilled when the announcement came out that it was in the first window of games for the week.
Yeah, no, look, there is a certain something about Kinnick Stadium at night that leads to upsets in games like this that we haven't really seen for early day games. Although the last time that we played a day game with this sort of magnitude, I think, heck, it would probably be Stanzi
era. 2017?
Yeah. Oh, I think it's even later than that, isn't it? or is there one game in 2017 you have in mind?
Perhaps that was one.
That was an afternoon kick, but it was a late afternoon kick.
Oh, was it? I had it in my head that it was earlier, but I also had done no research to confirm that or not.
Well, now we have to look it up to find out, because it's kind of sad that we don't know what time that game was. Three thirty Eastern kick. So okay, mid afternoon kick. All right. So yeah, 2017. I'll give you 2017. Boy, it felt like it was later in the day. It's November. It's always dark.
Yeah. Yeah. That might have even been after daylight savings kicked in. So
yeah. So
as the case may be.
So but a noon kick for a game like this has not come around recently. It's been a while. And so
and really even the trend for those games of that caliber to even kick at noon ever is very, very recent too.
Yeah.
Like this is Fox's brand new idea, basically. Otherwise, right. it just never would have happened, and someone would have gotten fired if they did.
Someone should probably get fired this time anyway.
Agreed.
Yes. Bob Stoops. No. So anyway, so yeah, we'll look at Michigan here in a second, but to sort of wrap up this past week, I Rutgers came in with a pretty good reputation on defense. They didn't really play anybody yet, but a good reputation on defense. Iowa moved the ball relatively effectively, at least by Iowa standards. Certainly ran the ball pretty well after a couple of adjustments on the offensive line. And Petras looked more composed than usual, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Certainly had his best game of the season by miles. And so, yeah, there's a certain amount of encouragement there. And then, of course, it's Iowa. So 14 points off of two defensive touchdowns is just par for the course.
Yeah, pretty much. The stat that I just saw was that was Iowa's fifth game with multiple defensive touchdowns in the last 10 years. No other Big Ten team has more than three. So this is pretty well Hawkeye territory and Phil Parker territory more than anybody else. Now, that said, and one, I agree that this was another substantial step forward for Petras. Both in terms of how he played his position and in terms of, his overall production. He went 11 for 17 and about 9 yards per pass. So, I would much rather have a QB go 11 for 17 for 150 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. I'd much rather have that than what Rutgers is. QB did, which was he threw for 300 yards, yeah, but it took him 49 attempts to do it.
Yeah,
and he also threw two picks, one of which got taken to the house, and really should have been three picks, but Merriweather mercifully knocked down that last one at the end of the game. But I mean, functionally, it was another pick, and yeah. Another one could have happened either earlier in that drive or on the drive prior, but it took a rather remarkable play by a Rutgers receiver to knock the ball out of, it might've been Merriweather's hands again, off of a deflection. So the Rutgers QB got them into trouble way more than, a big, nice round number like 300 yards would typically indicate. Like, congrats on the fantasy day, but that wasn't a winning performance by their QB.
Yeah.
And also, no. Go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
I was really impressed, most of all, by how hard and how often Iowa was hitting Rutgers' guys in a way that Rutgers was not hitting back. Like, that was some bully ball for 60 minutes, and that had to have blown Kirk's skirt up, so to speak. Like, that's exactly the type of football that he wants to see on the field. And he got it. Like, now Rutgers has to play Ohio State after getting their butts kicked up and down the field at home. Like, that's going to be brutal for Rutgers this week.
Yeah, I don't envy them. That's not the greatest draw of all time. I would say that. you make a very good point about Petras. Yes, he only attempted 17 passes. He didn't need to attempt more, frankly. Mm-hmm. And he averaged 4 more yards per attempt than Rutgers' quarterback who threw for 300. If he could somehow, I'm not saying duplicate that game because they probably need more than 148 yards at some point, but duplicate that efficiency, then Iowa might not be in that bad a shape.
And certainly we can finally put to bed, one, the booing, which is, at this point, if it continues before the Michigan game, I would call that unbecoming of Iowa fans. And two, maybe at the very least, we can put to bed the clamoring for Padilla as well. Like, booing is the worst part of that. But I would go so far as to say we're not at a point in the season anymore where we're still asking, well, how can the backup not be better than this? I don't think that we have to ask that anymore. Petras is, for now, and this might take,
that can change fast,
very fast against Michigan, but he has earned a little bit of goodwill. I think I thought he threw passes where they needed to be again for the second straight week and against a real Big Ten defense, not a great one, but a real Big Ten one. Used all of the field, you know, he was throwing short, intermediate, long, like, I thought he was fine. Not great. Not all Big Ten. Didn't have to be. But he was fine. And fine wins games when you've got the rest of Iowa football doing what it does.
Yeah. Especially when you're up against an opponent like Rutgers, where you're not, mm-hmm. It's not as if the explosiveness is going to come up and catch you. Really, I mean, the game was essentially over at halftime because of the defense, and they managed to keep it that way through the second half. I think Iowa's scoring chart for the season so far is hilarious. Drew Stevens leads the team in points with 18, 4 field goals, 6 extra points.
Who started the year as the backup.
As the backup, yes.
And we're 4 games into the season.
Caleb Johnson and LaShawn Williams each have 2 touchdowns to put them at 12. At 6 points, we have Arlen Bruce, and then 2 defensive players, Cooper DeJean and Kayvon Merriweather. And then the original starting kicker, Aaron Blum, at 4 points. And then 2 more defensive players, Jack Campbell and Joe Evans, with 2 points apiece. Mm-hmm. That's the entirety of Iowa scoring so far this year. That's, if you're counting at home, that's 12, 14, 16 points for the defense, 22 points for the special teams, and 30 points for the offense.
That's correct. More
complimentary
than
football, Adam. Complimentary football.
It's quite a compliment to receive.
All right. Where are the negatives out of this week?
Glaring negative has to be third down conversions.
Yes.
Iowa was 1 for 9, and a lot of those attempts were not particularly close or competitive. And it seems like, especially on third downs, when opponents bring extra pressure, not only does the line not really know how to handle it, but again, I almost called him Stanley, and I need to stop that. This is year 3. But again, Petras doesn't know how to handle that pressure with any regularity. We've seen him make a few plays in the pocket, but, you know, it's like saying we've seen Northwestern win a few games in the 1980s. Like, it's rare. Like, those are the exceptions that prove the rule. And so, and the reason that I keep confusing him with Nate Stanley is because it was the exact same problem with him too, which leads me to believe that it's not really the problem of the quarterbacks coming in, but who's been teaching them.
Yeah. And I mean, that goes back to a fundamental issue of Iowa football for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. Basically, they've had two guys coaching these quarterbacks and seem to have pretty much similar results as it goes along. Now, I think you could point to progression in Nate Stanley's play to a certain extent. I think you can point to progression in some of the previous quarterbacks play, mm-hmm. but it does feel lacking here. And then combined with what appears to be a circle of trust issue on the offensive line, it's purely eye test. I can't give you any statistical detail on this, but the shift from Bo Stevens to Tyler Ellsbury at guard appeared to pay dividends immediately and consistently. And then they went back to Stevens again after a while anyway.
Yeah. And that pattern has happened in both of the last two games too.
Yeah.
And I can't quite figure out why. Because Stevens has not had a good season.
No. I mean,
he and Colby in particular have so much room for growth. And it's strange because they were supposed to be some of the hot recruits. Like, these are the guys Kirk wanted the most.
Yeah. The Stevens thing, I think, is problematic because it seems as if they're going to give him four or five shots to try to win the job when, as pointed out by Kennington Smith at the Register, Ellsbury was the highest graded offensive lineman by Pro Football Focus in week three and couldn't break it into the lineup despite that performance. He then blows the doors off of Rutgers in week four and is again put back on the bench. At some point, you have to just bite the bullet and say the better guy is the guy who's got results, except that that's just not how Iowa does these things. So,
yeah. Next man in has sort of turned into next man in, but only when we say so.
Right. So for whatever reason, they're sticking with that. That seems to be a relatively simple fix. And maybe we'll see that come Michigan week, Iowa will go with what they've seen on the field. But the line still seems a bit problematic. I'm encouraged that they were able to run the ball as effectively as they did, especially in the second half. But and then you're right, third downs. I mean, really, this offense, if it gets off of schedule, just has no recourse. There's no getting back on track. If there's a penalty, if there's a negative play, it's so difficult for them to try to make up for that lost yardage. And you might as well just send Torrey Taylor out there immediately. Speaking of positives, Torrey Taylor, Big Ten Special Teams Player of the Week.
Suck it, Corsack.
We won Punapalooza, baby.
We did it in style. And that could have gone sideways too, because the Rutgers player on Taylor's first punt of the evening came about a fingernail away from swatting that back into Iowa's end zone and somehow didn't.
Yeah.
Like, you could see Taylor look back thinking it had just been blocked.
Yeah.
And then somehow it still went 40 yards.
That's just the power of the punt.
That's true.
You literally can't block it. You can't be strong enough to actually block the ball. It's hit so hard.
If you get your hand in the way, your hand gets decapitated.
Yes, your hand gets torn off.
That's right.
Does it feel like Iowa's found a kicker?
Oh, for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot about the Blom experience the first couple of weeks that left something to be desired, and it feels like they've got the right guy now on that front.
Yeah, and it was what was particularly striking about it was, from all accounts, Stevens had the better camp of the two. But since he's a freshman, Blom got first shot at it. And again, not only does that not really, you know, seem to jive with what we had, you know, expected from Ferentz over the last 20 years, but In particular, this is LeVar Woods' area.
Right.
And you wouldn't expect him to sign off on the guy who had the worst camp. So again, had to have been some stuff in practice in terms of day-to-day consistency that maybe we didn't see. Maybe there's some eye test thing again. But ultimately, the decision really never passed the smell test to begin with. And I don't want to put the Iowa State loss on Blonde, because I don't think that's fair in the slightest.
No, not on that last kick. No,
especially in the driving rain and for as long as that was. Like, I do not interpret that as me saying Stevens had a better chance of hitting it than Blonde did, because I don't want to say that's the case. But it did seem like that was, you know, a sort of a fitting end to the experiment at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's the sort of thing that convinces Kirk that we've seen enough. And it's too bad.
If only that applied across the board. 1 week
too late. But it was 1 week too late. And it's a shame that Iowa didn't have the ideal lineup out there in that moment where one play can swing the game.
Right. Yeah, that probably, I'm not saying that leads to the Iowa State loss, but the sum total of it probably does certainly increase your loss probability.
Yeah.
to almost certainty. So,
and it just feels like leaving meat on the bone. You know what I mean? Like, if
a team that's eating very lean, yes, that's a big deal.
Yeah. 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 If the best kicker misses it, and frankly, I think Stevens probably would have, at the very least, there's nothing to like regret about that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's where I'm at.
I think we probably we're kind of burying the lead so far. I think we need to talk about the Cooper DeJean experience.
Oh my God.
I've been advocating to make the guy the quarterback for 2.5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
For a reason that even I didn't quite understand until I actually watched the guy play. They should find ways to put the ball in that guy's hands as often as they possibly can. I don't care if he's playing offense, defense, and special teams. Put him on the field and let things happen.
I'll say this. If Kirk could clone DeJean and have like half a dozen of them, he would still have room for more Coopers DeJean in the starting lineup.
Cooper DeJean plural is like notaries public.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, Cooper's DeJean.
Because the coaches have said, they could play him at cash. They could play him at corner. They could play him at either of the two safeties.
Yep.
We know he could play quarterback. We've seen him win a state championship doing it.
Yep.
Do the skills?
He could play receiver. He could play halfback.
Receiver to running back. Yes. Like, there's seven right there. You could start seven Coopers and be okay with it, which is madness. But unfortunately, we only have the one. And I'll give the coaches credit for understanding where he was going to have the brightest future. And I'm telling you, that guy has multimillionaire, like mega millionaire, digits written all over him in the NFL in the secondary.
He's like Jabril Peppers with actual talent.
Oh,
that's right. We're going there this week. The hell with it.
Michigan Hate Week.
Michigan Hate Week is on. Yeah. Hey, look, the kid's amazing. He's fantastic. He's exactly what this defense needs at the moment. I get nervous about the fact that they're going to put him with Nwankwo at some point in the future and make the entire world explode. But if we could get seven Coopers DeJean, as you put it, and then clone three more Luke Ness monsters for the front line, We would be in very, very good shape. By the way, you all heard it here first from my astute and esteemed colleague, Lucas Van Ness is a tank, an absolute tank.
We called it. Did we not?
We called it.
We said that it was going to be trench warfare until someone has a tank. And Van Ness absolutely tanked that Rutgers offensive line.
It was a sight to see. I mean, it was just, it was lovely.
Yeah. The, obviously, the crown jewel of his performance was hitting the QB in the next week on the throw that ended up being the DeGene pick six.
Yeah.
But he had about, I mean, if you want to go back and watch the whole game, I don't think anyone should want to do that unless they're being paid to do it. But if he did, I think you would be able to find easily half a dozen plays that were completely blown up because Rutgers didn't have anyone who could stay in front of him. Easily.
Easily.
And that is so disruptive for an entire, like, you can call whatever plays you want, but when the, I love the Luke Ness monster, when he's in your backfield, whenever he feels like it, like as a non-problematic Bosa brother, like, fine, call whatever you want, but the play's going to be over as soon as he decides it is.
I'm all in on this defense. It's one of the best I've seen. And it's the only reason I don't think that we're going 4-8. even after 3 wins in the first 4 weeks.
It would take several injuries on the defensive front. And we've already seen a few already.
Yeah.
It would take several more.
I go back and look at 12, right? Because 12 was was an inept offense. No doubt about
badly.
It. And an inept offense being led by a veteran quarterback to top it all off, right? And it was not in any way, shape, or form Vandenberg's problem that year. He had literally no receivers, and he was running an offense that got installed late.
And didn't suit his strengths either.
Yeah, yeah. But
yeah, just a terrible fit, yeah.
But going back and looking at the numbers, it looks a lot alike. The only difference is we don't have a defense that's giving up 381 yards a game and, you know, 3 or 4 touchdowns. It's, they might give up a few yards. They gave up over 300 this week, but they're worthless yards that they're giving up. They're all kind of on their own side of the field or in service of the next turnover. And it's really an amazing defense to watch. And actually, a far more fun defense to watch than Iowa's offense has been in years. So you take your joy in places you can find it.
There.
Yeah.
And even say what you will about Rutgers being able to move the ball. At the end of the day, they only rushed it for 60 yards on 24 attempts. Like, just handing the ball off was never going to work for the Scarlet Knights. And it didn't. It took some pretty decent throws, some pretty decent catches. And I don't say this to diminish it, because luck's a part of every football game. And Iowa gets lucky plenty of times too. But yeah, Rutgers got lucky on some of those long throws. It's, again, that's not pejorative. It's not, you know, diminishing anything they did. But ultimately, like, if you gave Rutgers that game 10 times in a row, one, I don't think they're going to hit 300 yards too often. Two, the NCAA would probably investigate. Why are you doing this?
Stop it. Why somebody else?
This is cruel and inhumane.
Do you see any weaknesses at all in this defense right now? Because I don't. I mean, we've got some guys banged up and injured, but they have more than capable replacements in place ready to go. And we've got 5-star guys sitting on the bench right now because there's too much talent and cohesion and just like ass kicking drive out of this defense at the moment. The safety play is fantastic. Honestly, if you're looking for a weakness, it could possibly be preseason All-American Riley Moss, which is just staggeringly absurd. the linebacker play is exactly what we expected. The defensive line has congealed again and has found an absolute dominant ass kicker, as we've talked about. Like, there is no apparent weakness here. And I say that because I didn't feel like there was an apparent weakness on this team last year going into the Michigan game, and they gave up 41 points.
Yeah, I'll say this. They missed the cornerbacks by the end of the season more than they wanted to let on.
Yeah.
And also, Riley Moss, God bless him, he earned that Big Ten Defensive Back of the Year, but Michigan was always going to be a bad matchup for him. And I'm a little bit worried about that one, too. I'd love to, for this week, love to be proven wrong. And I know that he spent the offseason, you know, getting himself in better shape for the more physical matchups. But we saw Rutgers try to go directly at him this week to varying amounts of success. I thought he also made a few decent plays too, but like he gave up that touchdown catch. And again, that was one where at the very least he played good defense. You could argue that there was offensive pass interference. You could also argue that the play shouldn't have counted to begin with, but you know, at the end of the day, they weren't afraid to throw right at him and they got a touchdown out of it. So, you know, obviously that's going to be something worth watching for the Michigan game. Still a little bit worried about depth on the defensive line, especially with that YA Black.
Yep.
And I think that they're sort of worried. Is Shannon healthy? Is he dinged up?
See, I don't think he's 100%. It doesn't appear that he's 100%.
Which is something that you would want. But at the same time, the guys that they have in the rotation are good. Really good. They can make plays. So it's not a horrid issue yet. But if Michigan's offensive line is trying to wear Iowa out, there's some fresh legs that they would really like to have on that front that are probably either not going to be available or not going to be playing at a level that they really want to play at. So that might manifest itself as a problem on Saturday, but it also might not. I mean, we'll see.
I mean, I watched Michigan, Maryland pretty intently this weekend. Blake Corum scares the bejesus out of me again.
Yes.
I mean, I still see him in nightmares from December and he looks better. That's the part that really, really worries me is if we can't stop the run. I mean, Michigan beat us last year only completing 18 passes. They didn't need any more than that.
Right.
I mean, it helped that a significant number of them were like, you know, long passes, but they didn't need a whole lot to break us down defensively because the running game was so effective. I got to assume that that's not going to happen again. For one, you've got a relatively healthy bunch that's playing very, very, very well at the moment. Two, most of these guys are back. They've now seen it. And as good as Michigan's offensive line looks, and they look very, very good, I don't know if they're quite, if they've quite seen anything like this just yet this year. And so maybe you catch them by a little bit by surprise. Plus you've got, you know, it's a home game. It's Kinnick. It's going to be a lit crowd, even if it's at noon. You got a real chance at setting a tone early on and then trying to strangle them, frankly. I wonder about where the Neo in the Matrix is that leads us to win this game, because you almost need one of those, need an Akram Wadley or a Jermell Lewis to win this game. And I'm not sure who that guy is yet.
Yeah. I'm a little bit worried that Corum is that Neo, right? Like I'm worried that Michigan is the team that has him this time around. And I'd love to be proven wrong. The good news is I think on Michigan's side of the ball, JJ McCarthy's good to very good. But again, that's not just good to very good is not something that necessarily strikes fear into the hearts of Iowa's defense, especially the back seven. Now,
yeah,
what Michigan did a good job of, and what usually most of the teams that end up beating Iowa, or at the very least make Iowa's defense look average, they figure out ways to manufacture one-on-one matchups that they can win. And it's hard to do against a disciplined defense, but Michigan found ways to do it, especially like when the game started to get sideways and started to get out of hand in December. And Purdue obviously, you know, just spams the wide receiver one button because they figure out like how to make that work and then just spam, spam, spam. Wisconsin, especially under Bielema, but to a lesser extent under Crist, knows how to do that with their running backs. So it's not as if this is some wretched sphinx of a defense. Ultimately, Parker runs something that is fairly predictable, but in the same way that a steamroller is fairly predictable. You're still going to get smashed if you try to like win a fist fight with it. So it takes a little bit of cleverness, but we've seen a little bit of cleverness out of the Big Ten every now and then. If Harbaugh and whoever their offensive coordinator is, if they can dial some of that up, yeah, we might be in for a bit of a long early afternoon. But if, like you said, if Iowa sets the tone early, if McCarthy is all of a sudden out of his comfort zone, and especially if the defensive line starts blowing things up before they have a chance to develop, before those matchups can manifest themselves, then all of a sudden we might already be back to it doesn't matter what you call. I can absolutely see that happening.
Yeah, absolutely. This one scares me a little bit. But on the other hand, it's a noon kickoff on a Saturday. There's plenty of other games to bother me later on in the day if this one doesn't go right. So in a year where we've already got a loss on the record, if it doesn't go our way, this probably isn't, given what we've seen so far, probably isn't a Big Ten contender, absent some sort of overhaul of the offense midseason. And Christ, looking at what Minnesota did last week, I'm genuinely concerned about that game already.
I couldn't turn it off. It was
mesmerizing.
Minnesota looked like the most Big Ten West team in the division.
Yes, and it was mesmerizing. Sparty didn't
want to be out there. It was a little frightening.
That's a little scary. That team worries me a little bit. But as it stands, we'll take on our good friends from Michigan this week and see what develops from there. All right. Well, we'll cut this one quick because there wasn't much to talk about from Rutgers. It was a pretty straightforward game. By the way, we hit the over. That was huge. Finally,
we did. And so that'll get a little bit of the rubbernecking off of our backs for the rest of the year. Again, another phenomenon that could absolutely rear its head within about two series of the game on Saturday. But we've been granted a reprieve. We're not necessarily the first punchline of the college football world. We're a mid-card punchline now. That's progress.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the very least, we're 3-1. So,
amen.
All right. We'll be back next week to talk about the aftermath of this Michigan game. I expect it's going to be more considerable than what we got from Rutgers, and a look ahead to the second month of the season. Until then, Pat Vint, Adam Jacoby, punting is winning. Go Iowa Awesome.